Okay, well, I promised last time that I would solve the wave equation, the vibrating string problem, via D'Alembert's solution. It's actually the solution that Jacob Bernoulli came up with. So let me recap what I had at the end of the hour last time. So I took Johann Bernoulli's solution that involved a Fourier series. So let's see, this was Johann's. I messed around with it, and I got that my solution u of xt, where I was, when I wrote out the Fourier series sum, I got 1 half. Let's take, this was the case g identically 0, slightly easier. I messed around with it, and I got this, x plus c plus f star of x minus ct. And remember, that was a Fourier series, and Fourier series, f star is basically f, but f star has to be defined outside the interval from 0 to L. And the Fourier series led me to believe that I should take f star to be the odd periodic extension of the f on the interval 0 to L. So f star is the odd periodic extension of f. So remember, the picture was f was only defined on the interval from 0 to L. And so if I had an f that looked like that on the interval from 0 to L, then the first thing I did was extended it to negative values by taking the reflection like this. That's the odd extension. Then the periodic extension is I pick this up and just repeat it. So that would make it 2L periodic. So the next one I would repeat over here. And the same over here. I would make the odd periodic extension. So that's what f star. This whole thing here is f star. And the blue thing is the f. F is only defined on 0 to L. So last time I showed that this thing satisfies the differential equation. So last time, this u of xt solves the PDE. Check, we did that. And u solves the boundary conditions, namely that the boundary conditions are that the thing is pinned down at 0. No, I didn't check that. What I did check is it satisfies the initial conditions. I checked that last time. The one thing I didn't check is, does f satisfy the boundary conditions? So I want to do that now before I move on. So what about the boundary conditions? Let's think about that. Let's see, the boundary conditions are u of x, no, I keep writing them down wrong. The boundary conditions are, there's two of them. U of x is 0 for all time is pinned down. And u at the other end is pinned down. And so when you write that in the f, let's see, what is this? U of 0t would be 1 half of f star of x plus c times 0 plus f star of what am I doing? I don't know why I keep messing. So x is 0. So this would be 0 plus ct. And this would be 0 minus ct. And I want that to be equal to 0. So that's the first boundary condition. And when you look at that, that's when you realize, aha, no wonder this leads you to believe that, look it, I need F star of CT to be minus F of minus CT. So the aha here is, I need F star of CT, and now see if CT is inside the interval from 0 to L for little t, but this one immediately goes out the other direction. So this would go to the minus side. And this shows me that I need, on the minus side, I need it to be, over here on the minus side, I need it to be minus this for that to hold. Which means that boundary condition tells me this has got to be the odd extension. So the aha there is F star needs to be the odd to make this happen. Let's call this number one right here, and this number two. It needs to odd to make one happen. So we know that we better have F star an odd function. The other one, let's think about number two. That is 1/2 F star of L plus CT plus F star of L minus CT. We want that to be zero. And I claim that's how Jakob, or whoever did it, could see that it's got to be periodic. Because if you think about the graph, let me go back and look at my graph. Here it is. L plus CT it would be this little distance here. So you think of this little d as a plus CT. This is a little distance d. And L minus CT would be this little distance here. And those have to be minus each other. Unfortunately, the function's zero right there, so they can't be minus. But if you go to that next red thing where it does be minus, sure enough, making it the periodic extension makes exactly that happen. So when you draw the picture and stare at it, you realize the next aha is the odd periodic extension makes that happen. So you could have invented this solution from Johann's thing and say, aha, it sure is a solution, and it sure is a lot easier than Fourier series. Makes that happen. Okay? All right, now I want to do this in kind of a more scientific way, the way D'Alembert came up with. Before I do that, let me tell you what the general case is. The nice Jakob solution. So Jakob's nice, clean solution, even when g is not equal to zero. Not the zero function. So step one, we let f star and g star be the odd periodic extensions of F and G. Respectively. And then I'm going to let capital G of X be the integral from 0 to x of g of u du. So it's an antiderivative for g. Then Jakob's solution is u of xt. It's got two halves. The first half is the one that makes the f problems satisfied. So it'd be a half f star. Oops, this is supposed to be a g star right there. So it'd be a half the odd periodic extension of the same thing we had for the... What's happening here? Same thing. X minus ct. So that looks like before. But now the new part is... This makes the g problem solved. And it's 1 over 2c capital G of x plus ct. And we'd have a minus capital G of x minus ct. That is D'Alembert's solution. Or I guess Jakob did it a long time before D'Alembert, but D'Alembert sort of figured out how you can demonstrate that this works. Okay, I just wrote it down. Now I'm going to deduce it. I guess that's, yeah, step one and only. Questions about anything? Okay, so here's D'Alembert's very clever solution. He did a change of variables. When he looked at that, he said, aha, there's kind of secret variables floating in this solution. X plus ct is something, and x minus ct is something. What happens if you change this equation to involve those variables instead of the original? So I can see how you would try this. So you introduce new variables. Let's see. I've already got a u. So I'm going to use w and v. One variable is going to be v equals x plus ct, and the other variable is going to be w, which is x minus ct. And now I've got to do the chain rule to change my wave equation into something involving just the new variables, u and v. So let's see, remember my wave equation is c squared du dt, let's write utt for the second derivative, equals c squared uxx. So the way to do these kinds of things is to write, let's write du dx. That would be du dv times dv dx. Plus du dw times dw dx. That's the two variable chain rule. Change of variables formula. All right, du dv dx, let's see, v is that thing. Dv dx would just be 1. And dw dx is also just 1. And so these things are just 1. And so what we get is that this is just du dv plus du dw. And when you do that again, you get, let's see, I would do it, I'd get 2 here, I'd get d u sub v dv times dv dx plus du sub v dw times dw dx. That's the first half, plus du sub w dv times dv dx, which is 1, plus du sub w dw times dw dx, which is 1. And so I claim what you get. Let's see, that would be uvv times 1 plus uwv plus uvw plus uww. And if this is going to be a nice solution, the thing is going to be twice differentiable. And so we're going to hope that our solution turns out to be twice continuously differentiable. And so this would be equal to 2 times u of wv. Okay, so you do the same thing now with the t variables. So this is what uxx turns out to be. I've got to stick that in the wave equation. And now, so what about the tt thing? Let's do the first one. du by t, dt would be du du by dv times dv by dt plus du by dw times dw by dt. What? Which one was v? V was x plus ct. So this dv dt is going to be a c. And w was x minus ct. This one's going to be a minus c. And so when you do this, you get c times uv minus c times uw. And now I'm going to do it again. Let's see. Interesting thing when I do it again. I think I'll skip it. This is getting kind of tedious. UTT is c squared comes out, and the c, there would be 2 minus c's is going to give you a plus c, and you'd get minus 2 uwv plus uww. Okay, so the two important things are this one was uvv plus uwv plus UWW. And the UTT one is C squared that. So when I plug this into the differential equation, let's see, so what am I going to do? This has to equal C squared times this. So this equals c squared times that. When you write those two out, the UW, let's see, the UDVs cancel, and the UWWs cancel, and you're left with something considerably, shockingly short. Namely, you're left with, plug into the wave equation. This junk cancels, and you're left with minus 2. Let's see, there's a c squared in front of it. Minus 2 c squared uwv equals plus. I'm sorry, this is a 2 right here. Equals a plus 2 c squared uwv. In other words, 4 c squared uwv equals 0. Well, I can cancel the 4 c squared out now, and then this is the promised thing I said we'd get. A very simple PDE. So this change of variables that D'Alembert came up with reduces the wave equation to this. I'm going to convince you that's the simplest PDE there is, the second simplest one. So remember that last time I showed you the solution to d by d, let's take d by dv of something. That just says that this function u doesn't depend on v. So you take horizontal lines, let's take the v direction, like this. And then if you look along a horizontal line, so let's see, we've got v and w now. You look along the horizontal line here, u is constant along that horizontal line. And that constant might depend on w. So the deal is here, u is constant on horizontal lines. And so that what this solution we came up with is means that so u has to be a function of the other variable. U of vw is a function, it's a constant, but that constant might depend on w. If I pick a different w, it's constant along that horizontal line, but it doesn't have to be the same constant. So the constant can depend on w. So this is called an arbitrary function of w. That's the solution. It's not an arbitrary constant, it's an arbitrary function of w. Okay, and that's exactly what we've got to solve here. So except I got to do it twice. So let's see, what do I have? I don't really care what order these are. Let me look at what I'm doing here. Okay, I'll do it like this. So here's our problem. We've got d by dw of du by dv is identically zero. So this means that since d by dw of this thing is equal to zero, this thing has to be constant on w, on the w lines. And that means this thing has to be a function of the other, this thing must be a constant of, must equal the function of the other variable. So du dv has to be a constant that depends on v. When you think about it, the other variable. Okay, so that's good. That's what I have. Du dv has to be the constant, this function of a v. And now I want to say that, what do I want to do? I want to solve this. And I guess the most straightforward way to think about it is, what if I took an antiderivative of this thing and subtracted it on the other side? So here's the big idea. Let's let I need to call it something. Gee, how many functions have I got sitting around? Let's let P of V be an antiderivative of this C of V. Antiderivative of C of E. So that P prime of V is equal to C of V. And now this is my new equation. This thing has got to be, this is the new equation I'm trying to solve. So now let me look at that. My new equation is du dv equals c of v. And now I'm writing that as p prime of v. So here's the reason I did that. Now if I put this on the other side, I can realize, aha, du dv minus p prime of v has got to be 0. And what I'm realizing now is that that's the partial derivative of something. This is d by dv of u minus p of v. And that's my baby, that's my easiest PDE again. If d by dv is something is 0, it must be a function of the other variable. So an aha right here is, so u minus p of v has to be a function of the other variable, k of w. And now I'm basically done. And so finally what we get is that my function u of wv is p of v plus k of v, k of w. And now if I go to back to my x and y's, I get u of xy, let's see, remember, is a function of v was x plus ct, and w was x minus ct. And it's traditional to call, instead of using p and k, it's traditional to call these functions phi and psi. So I'm going to change their name right now. I'm going to call this one phi and this one psi instead. So that's what D'Alembert did, and everybody's doing it like that ever since. So D'Alembert's solution using this change of variables, not Albert, he came up with solutions to the wave equation that are phi of x plus ct plus psi of x minus ct. And now we want to satisfy the initial conditions. So let's think about those for a second. I better calculate du dt here. Du dt of xy would be phi prime of x plus ct, and times d by dt of the inside there would be a c. And this one would be minus phi prime of x minus ct times c, or I should say plus times a minus c.
It should be a function of x and y, or x and t.
What?
It's a du dt of x and y.
So I'm sorry, why did I do this? My y, I never had a y. My two variables in the beginning were x and t. Yeah, I never did have a y. This is a time variable, not a space variable. Okay, thanks for catching that. That's what I got when I undid my change of variables. Okay, so those are the functions, and I want the initial conditions to be satisfied. So I want u of x at time zero, when I plug that in, that's phi of x plus psi of x. I want that to be equal to f of x. Let's call that equation A. And now the other one, du dt at time zero, Let's see, that's c times phi prime of x minus c times psi prime of x. I want that to be g of x. It would make sense to call that g, that b. But I don't like it. I want to solve for phi and psi. So, to get rid of this derivatives, I'm going to integrate this equation. And so the next clever step, we can absorb constants and assume that, let's see, I think you convince yourself that you need these phi and the psi to be 0 at 0 because of the bounded, we want the boundary to be stuck. So let's assume phi of 0 and psi of 0 are both 0. And then I want to integrate this second equation to get one that doesn't involve derivatives. And so I guess I'll have to call this B for the time being. Integrate B. From 0 to x. Okay, then I would get, when I do that, I would get, let's see, phi of x, when I integrate phi prime, I would get phi. Phi of, so what would I get? I get the integral c times the integral from 0 to x phi prime of u du minus c times the integral from 0 to x of psi prime u du equals the integral from 0 to x of g of u du. And that's what I called capital G. And so, and when you integrate this, you get phi of x minus phi of 0. And phi of 0 is 0. So what I claim is that you get a new B equation here. You get phi of x minus psi of x. When I put the c on the other side, is 1 over c times g of x. Where g is this antiderivative of little g. That's my equation B. Okay, so I've got two equations. Let me write them down, A and B. A is phi of x plus psi of x needs to be equal to f. And B, my second one, I guess I should call this B prime because it's different than my first one, is phi of x minus psi of x equals 1 over c antiderivative of little g. And it turns out that those are a snap to solve. If I add them together, the psi's cancel, and I see what the phi needs to be. So a plus b is going to spit out phi. That tells me that phi of x is one, when I add them together, I'm going to get a half of f of x plus 1 over c times g of x. And then when I subtract them, a minus b, that's going to kill the phi's and give me 2 psi. And so 2 psi is, and that tells me that psi of x is a half times what? F of x minus 1 over c g of x. And when you go and plug that in, sure enough, that's the solution I wrote out when I started. And now you can, a miracle happens, and the boundary conditions automatically hold. If these are the periodic odd extensions, the boundary conditions automatically hold. I don't know, I think maybe D'Alembert kind of lucked out with that part. So last, the boundary conditions hold. The BC hold.
And so we're done.
That's neat. It's kind of, so it's, you can see why Jakob won the contest, because it's so clean and nice. So this shows that Jakob's solution is the solution. And you can drive it. So I think I want to give you a maple demo that shows that this actually gives you a beautiful picture of the solution. Before I did that, I thought I'd draw some couple little pictures here. Let's suppose f of x is just a little bump. Then f of x minus t, let's see, remember, what is it? If you say take f of x minus a would moves the origin a distance a to the right. So I claim that f of x minus t, x minus ct, would take this picture and move it a distance ct to the right. So, let's see, I'm going to make this here, here. This is going to move over a distance ct. So if I pick this up and move it to the right, a distance ct, this is f of x minus ct. So in other words, as t goes along, it takes this thing and sends it on its way that way. This is supposed to look in the middle of that little bump. That's a ct distance. So in other words, this little bump is just moving to the right. F of x minus t, it takes that bump, and as t goes along, it's just traveling like that, going away. And the other one, x plus ct, is traveling the other way. So, this one would be the f of x plus ct, and it's going that way.
And somehow the solution to D'Alembert's solution cleverly has waves that are going opposite directions and plowing through each other.
That's the picture. And so I want to convince you, I have maple running here. This looks like a lot, but it's gonna go by quickly. Can anybody read that? Let's see, I've mentioned before, with plots, loads a bunch of commands. All of those commands to Maple. And one of them, the one I'm going to use is animate. So I just loaded them by pushing return. If you don't want to see all that junk, you can put a colon instead of a semicolon. It loads it without showing you that. And now I'm going to define U to be the Heaviside function. That's the heavy side. Heavy side function is 0 until 0, and then bam, it goes up to 1. So it's the step function. And it's part of Maple. I should plot it to show it to you, but you've probably seen it before. So it's 0 until you get to 0, and then wham, it goes up to 1 and stays at 1 forever. That's how I like to define piecewise functions. So I'm going to define a G1 here to be... let's see. This step function, u, let's see, it's going to turn on at time 1/4. And it's going to, and then I'm going to subtract the step function that turns on at times 1/2. I claim that this thing is 1 between 1/4 and 1/2, and it's 0
the rest of the time. And on that interval, I want the function to be x minus a fourth. Then this one's going to turn on at a half and turn off at three-fourths, if you think about it. So it's zero until it gets to a half, then bam, it's one. And then at three-fourths, this one turns on and shuts off that thing. So this function is one between a half and three-fourths. And on that interval, I want my function to be minus x plus three-fourths.
Okay, you got to think about that a little bit. There's my g. And now I'm going to plot that so you can see what I was thinking. It's my little bump thing.
So that u turns on at a fourth and turns off at a half. And it's 1 on that little interval. And on that little interval, I'm multiplying it by x minus a fourth. So it's that line there. And it's 0 before that. And then at a half, this one, that turns off at a half. This one turns on at a half and off at 3/4. So it would become 1 there. And then when I get to 3/4, I subtract 1. That shuts it off. And on that interval, it's minus x plus 3/4. That's the other side of that TP. And then it's 0 after that.
Okay, so if I'm going to do Bernoulli's thing, or I need to make the odd periodic extension.
And I can do that. My g that I really want is, I'm going to take g of x, and I'm going to subtract minus g of minus x. That automatically gives me the odd periodic extension. Since it's 0 on the, you know, it's 0 everywhere else, so if I take g of minus x, that makes it flip on the left-hand side. And then if I take minus that, it goes upside down.
Let's see if it really does do that. Okay, so I took my function I defined up there and did that to it. And now I'm going to graph it.
And sure enough, that spits me out the odd periodic, I'm sorry, that's the odd extension. It's not periodic yet. I'm getting closer. Now I've got to make it periodic. So I'm going to, it's 0 everywhere else. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to shift that and add it to my previous one. Since it's 0 everywhere else, it's not going to mess up my previous one. So here's a clever thing to do. Let's see, it's a period 2. So I'm going to add my function. I'm going to take x plus various multiples of 2 and add them all together. That's going to pick it up and move it by 2 and add it to the previous one. Pick it up and move it by 2 and add it to the previous one. And I've got to do minus n's too. So I think I'll just do a few of them. Did I push return? I did that. Okay, so I'm taking a sum. And I'm only taking a few of them. I'm taking periodic shifts and adding them together. These are period 2. So various multiples of 2 and just adding them together.
And sure enough, you're going to see I got the odd periodic extension that way.
There it is. I graphed that from minus 3 to plus 3. So you can see that, yep, it's repeating.
Okay, now for the big exciting moment. I want to animate that thing.
So this is the solution. I'm going to animate a half of x plus t. I'm taking c to be 1, plus f of x minus t. So this is a solution with an f but no g. This is the odd periodic extension of my original function. I only care about it on the interval from 0 to 1. And I'm going to take my animation, let's see, to be 0 to 4. This is the animation variable. And to make the graph look nice and pointy, I'm going to take the number of points to be 500. And to make it move smoothly, I'm going to take the number of frames to be 100.
Let's see what happens. There's my little player. I'll go full screen. Let's see, I want it to, here's the one loop of it. Is that cool or what? Why isn't, did I make it periodic? I only went around a couple times. So Let's see, how can I make it periodic? There's a little thingy. Huh. Is there a button to make it periodic? Yeah, I can make... No, I can turn it around. Furniture second. There's usually a button to make it periodic. Ah! Oh, here it is. This thing. I want it to loop. Okay, let me play it. And I want to slow it down. Where's the frames per second? I'm going to slow it down so it's not moving by so fast.
And what you can see is, yeah, those are little triangle things right there. They clobber into each other and they superimpose and make you a big pyramid. Then they just cross each other. They hit the other side and reflect down. So actually the boundary condition means these waves come running into the boundary and they flip up side down and go out the other way. This is like when a wave hits a wall, a water wave hits a wall. It bounces off and goes the other way. That's exactly what's happening here in the one-dimensional wave equation. Those little blips are plowing into this wall and getting bounced out the other way, but they turn upside down when they do that. I like the spot where you get these little cat ears popping up. Where is it? Right there. Yeah. So it's a much more hands-on understanding of the wave equation than Johann's solution was. But Johann's was a very important breakthrough because it meant that you could do electronics and simulate signals with just sine waves, and became extremely important in all kinds of engineering and science. Plus understanding why music comes out of the vibrating string. Why should there be frequencies? This thing has frequencies hidden in the background. This thing would have a pitch and a tone like a musical instrument. And you'd have to figure out why do you feel those sounds? And the reason you feel the sounds are the Fourier series and the Fourier coefficients. You could hear overtones and think of this thing as a musical instrument rather than this graph picture. I'll post these commands on the aftermath so you can play with them if you want to. It's fun. It's fun to make different shapes. I mean, if you make this little TP even smaller, then you can really see the reflecting and bouncing business easier. It's fun to do. And now once you see the basic idea for how to do it, you can make any shape you want and play around with it. A little smooth bump is kind of fun to do. Feels like a good place to stop for today. Any last minute questions about anything?
Yeah, for the homework where we have to show that the complex exponential is like cosine plus I sine, and the hint says to use Taylor series.
Yeah, so if you stick I theta, you've got this Taylor series for e to the x,
yeah.
And if you stick I theta where the x is, it'll pop right out.
So we don't have to show that the rearrangement of the sum could mess with the convergence?
No, you don't have to show that.
Okay.
So you're welcome. You'll notice those homework problems are very similar to something you did in real analysis. You're welcome to consult your real analysis book and realize, aha, the work is the same. I just have to think of these things as complex numbers instead of real numbers. So you'll actually find pretty much a solution written out in your real analysis book. You're just going to allow the symbols to mean complex numbers, and the modulus is going to, absolute value is going to be modulus instead of absolute value. So you're welcome to sort of consult a real analysis book when you do them. Also, there's a Piazza page if you want to talk about them amongst yourselves. You're welcome to do it there. Okay. Yeah, so the homework is due on Monday.
Because when you do the power series, the top is going to be like x squared, and the bottom will be convergent.